but he was glaringly effulgent, and he was translating and commenting on the Srimad Bhagavatam until the very, almost the last, the day before he left. And the thoughts that were coming out from him during that time, at a time when ordinary person would be completely incapacitated, were so profound and at the same time sweet. I thought I would share with you, you know, one of the last things that he spoke.
Stephanie's asking if you could put it a little lower so she can read your lips.
Hare Krishna. For those of you who are new and don't know who Srila Prabhupada is, he's the founder of the of our movement, and he came out of India for the first time when he was 69 years old on a ship, not an airplane, but on a ship. It took him, how many months did it take him? A couple of months, I think, to go from India to here. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Nice to see you. And So by the time he reached America, he was 70. And after he was 70, he translated and commented on 70 volumes of transcendental literatures, the most profound books that you can imagine. We're actually sitting here as a result of that endeavor. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for that sacrifice that he made. And he traveled 14 times around the world after he was 70 years old. And we couldn't keep up with him. I was 26 when I first met him, and I was 31 when he left. That was 1977. So he had such a profound impact on the world. We're just beginning to see it, because the process of advancing in spiritual life is not a one-lifetime affair. We've been here for a very long time, all of us. We know that. Even in this body, we know. We were once in a little baby body, and now the body we have now is completely different. Every single cell has changed. In our material education, we learn that we have the same body, but it's just changing. But actually, the body is actually literally changing. And in the course of a lifetime, we may have had at least, you know, 8 or 10 bodies, maybe more. And yet we're the same person. So to have witnessed Srila Prabhupada at the very end in a body that could not function, literally, but whose consciousness was clear and ecstatic. So I wanted to read to you one of the last things that he dictated before he left. And then we can discuss and relish. This is the 13th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the the pastime that I related last week of Krishna bewildering Lord Brahma, who is the first created being and the most intelligent living being in the universe, who tried to test Krishna by stealing his calves and cowherd boyfriends when they were having a picnic in the forest. And Krishna maintained, he expanded himself into all the forms of the calves and the cowherd boys and maintained those forms exactly to the detail for a whole year, going into the village and living, each one living differently, individually with their own parents, and at the same time coming out to the forest and acting as if the same cowherd boys and same calves were there for a whole year. This is Krishna. This is his potency. So, you know, Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
There's some up here.
Vrindavan. Oh wait, it's just it settles in. Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. How are you?
Good.
Good. Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of Lord, where there's no hunger, anger, or thirst. Though naturally inimical, both human beings and fierce animals live there together in transcendental friendship. This is the purport that Prabhupada dictated from his disappearance bed. And amazingly, I am an editor. I edit English translations and compilations of these scriptures. So editing is a big deal. I don't know if you know what it is, but it's a big deal. But these purports that Prabhupada dictated towards the end, when apparently he was incapacitated, they practically didn't need any editing. They came out just perfect thoughts from his crystal clear consciousness, to prove to us that we're actually not the body. One time he was laying on his side and he looked at us. We were, you know, chanting very softly in the room, and he smiled and he said, "Don't think this isn't going to happen to you." And it went in really deep. You cannot imagine what an impression that made. This is Prabhupada's purport. The word vana means forest. We are afraid of the forest and do not wish to go there. But in Vrindavan, the forest animals are as good as demigods, for they have no envy. Even in this material world, in the forest, the animals live together. And when they go to drink water, they do not attack anyone. Envy develops because of sense gratification. But in Vrindavan, there is no sense gratification, for the only aim is Krishna's satisfaction. Even in this material world, the animals in Vrindavan are not envious of the sadhus who live there. The sadhus keep cows and supply milk to the tigers, saying, "Come here and take a little milk." Thus, envy and malice are unknown in Vrindavan. That is the difference between Vrindavan and the ordinary world. We are horrified to hear the name of Vana, the forest, but in Vrindavan there is no such horror. Everyone there is happy by pleasing Krishna. Krishna kirtana gananatana paro. Whether a Goswami or a tiger or other ferocious animal, everyone's business is the same, to please Krishna. Even the tigers are also devotees. This is the specific qualification of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, everyone is happy. The calf is happy. The cat is happy. The dog is happy. The man is happy. Everyone. Everyone wants to serve Krishna in a different capacity, and thus there is no envy. One may sometimes think that the monkeys in Vrindavan are envious because they cause mischief and steal food. Nowadays they steal glasses and trade them in for food to the local merchants. But in Vrindavan we find that the monkeys are allowed to take butter, which Krishna himself distributes. Krishna personally demonstrates that everyone has the right to live. This is Vrindavan life. Why should I live and you die? That is material life. The inhabitants of Vrindavan think, whatever is given by Krishna, let us divide it as prasad and eat. This mentality cannot appear all of a sudden, but it will gradually develop with Krishna consciousness. By sadhana, one can come to this platform. In the material world, one may collect funds all over the world in order to distribute food freely. Yet those to whom the food is given may not even feel appreciative. The value of Krishna consciousness, however, will gradually be very much appreciated. For instance, in an article about the temple of the Hare Krishna movement in Durban, South Africa, the Durban Post reported, all the devotees here are very active in the service of Lord Krishna, and the results are obvious to see. Happiness, good health, peace of mind, and the development of all good qualities. This is the nature of Vrindavan. Haro abhaktas yukato mahan guna. Without Krishna consciousness, happiness is impossible. One may struggle, but one cannot have happiness. We are therefore trying to give human society the opportunity for a life of happiness, good health, peace of mind, and all good qualities through God consciousness. Jai, Srila Prabhupada, jai. So try to understand, he wrote that when he was in a completely incapacitated condition, and just 2-3 days before he actually left this world. He didn't take pain relievers. He was completely in a natural state of consciousness. So this is the goal of our evolution, the evolution of consciousness, is to come to the state where we identify fully with our spiritual body. We have actually three bodies. We have the gross physical body, made of earth, water, fire, air, space, the one we can see and smell and taste and touch. We have our subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego, the ego of I am this body, that allows us to identify with the body. We dream in that body at night. That's the subtle body. It's more it has more facility. It can move faster. It can change forms. Anyone who's dreamt that they can fly through the sky? Yeah. I used to have, when I was a kid, I used to have a dream, a recurring dream. I'd put a towel, you know, and I'd put it here and I'd put it there through my, and then I'd run and then I'd, ooh, and I'd go flying through the sky and I'd see all kinds of things and fly with the birds. It was fun. And while that was going on, I felt exhilaration and sometimes fear when I was about to run into a telephone wire or something. Exhilaration, whoa! Or who knows, become a king, a queen, you know, do things that we can't imagine doing in this gross body. And then we have a spiritual body underneath. The spiritual being is the person who is experiencing the exhilaration and the thrills and the anxieties and the emotions that we go through in this gross body and also in the subtle body. When we're in the subtle body, we get absorbed in what we're doing and we forget the gross body. Sometimes we may have a dream in which we may have a dream in which we we're traveling and then we lose our baggage or lose all of our, you know, things that we're carrying, and then we are completely in anxiety and we're in a very difficult situation, and then we wake up and we go, ah, glad that didn't happen. But while it was going on in the dream, it was happening. It was happening. And we were in real anxiety. So the Vedas say that the evidence is clear. We are, every one of us has the experience, the evidence of the difference between ourselves and our body and our mind. I mean, the idea that we're different than the body is a little, now it's getting easier to understand, especially those of us who've been around for a while and practicing Krishna consciousness and thinking about it, you know, and meditating on this truth. But the consciousness and the intelligence and the subtle body, how they are different than ourselves, that's not so easy. That's not so easy to perceive directly. So Srila Prabhupada showed us by continuing with his service to Krishna, translating and commenting on the Srimad Bhagavatam, such profound thoughts, such clear thoughts. It was as if these last purports are so profound. They're as if he's, you know, collating all the things that he taught us in 12 years that he was going around the planet and picking us all up and teaching us, training us, and fixing us up in our spiritual conception. And just, you know, concentrating all of that teaching in these last purports. And I was so moved and so fortunate to hear his last words. I'll wait until my phone stops ringing so I can think straight. Stop. Distractions, material world. Yeah, thank you. The last words Srila Prabhupada spoke, and those words are also enshrined in one of the last purports. I didn't pick that purport, but one of the last purports, the words are enshrined. Just go on discussing Srimad Bhagavatam among yourselves, and everything will remain clear. So this is for those of you who are new, this is what our movement's about. It's actually about spiritual education. You know, it's about learning the things that we learned materially, relearning them, so that we can it's not that we become a different person or a different body, but our conceptions change. We used the example just a minute ago that the body is growing. It's the same body, but it's growing. But scientifically, every single cell is, you know, dying and being reborn, dying and being reborn, until finally, after 7 years, the body is completely changed. We have a different body than we did when we were 6 months old. This is spiritual conception. And when you think of the experiences you have in a dream, and how real they appear to you, how they seem real to you while the dream is going on, and the relief you feel when you wake up and you're just in the bed, and then you go through the experience during the day and you forget the dream body and you have another level of experience, all the whole spectrum of emotions and experiences. And then again, you're in the bed. And again, you're flying through the air or whatever it is you do in your dream. So which is real? We think this is real, you know, because, you know, we spend more time in this conscious, the gross bodily consciousness. But when we're in the dream, we don't think like that. So which is real? Neither. And at the same time, they're both real. It's not that it's false. It's not that our experience in this world are false, but it's temporary. And in that sense, it's unreal. But the spiritual body is eternal. The spiritual body is the person who's experiencing those emotions in the dream body and in the gross physical body. That's who we are, and that's who we're looking for. We say that's who we're looking for because we're looking, none of us want to die. None of us get out our, you know, agenda, you know, in the morning. Okay, I'm going to plan out my day now. And first of all, I'm going to run my car into a tree. And then my girlfriend's going to leave me. And then I'm going to lose my job. And then, you know, somebody's going to die in my family. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
How are you? Good to see you.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Good and getting better.
I can see.
Huh, thanks. Nobody makes a plan like that. Because that's not who we are. We want to be free. That's who we are. We don't want to die. We want to know everything. And the combined desire of all of us to know everything is the internet. That's what's happening here. The material nature is formed and initiated and set in motion by laws in order to give us an opportunity, the individual souls who want to try to own and control and enjoy matter. And truth is, truth be told, it ain't working out. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada is, in this purport, making this profound comparison of Vrindavan atmosphere to the material world, the material atmosphere. In Vrindavan, there's living beings, individual living beings, of all descriptions, of all varieties, of relationships, species, but none of them die. And none of them get sick. None of them get old. All the things that they're spending billions and trillions of dollars over the last, whatever, 100 or 200 or 300 years to try to avoid. And they're thinking. This is the influence of the material energy. The material energy is so powerful that it can make us think anything at any moment. And collectively, now that we have, you know, our digital world, you know, we can, you know, be walking along and click and click and send it halfway around the world to a loved one, and we're thinking, yeah, I am going to be God any moment. Look at the mystic potency that I have. Look what I can do. You know, I didn't even do any of that, actually. I didn't even, you know, decide on the senses that I have, or the talents, or whatever. So there is a spiritual world. There is a spiritual atmosphere where we can live in that freedom that all of us are hankering for, that all of the poets and the great writers and, you know, musicians have been singing about, and playwrights have been writing about, and politicians have been promising, you know, since time immemorial. Big debate, is there God or not? But was the subject matter is God? Where there's something not saying no, some say yes, but the subject matter is the same. If there's no God, why is it that everybody's been talking about Him for so many years, so many millenniums? Why? Here we all sitting, men and women, you know, same bodily structures, every one of us, but everyone different. Inconceivable. Why? We all have two eyes, ears, nose, mouth, two arms, 10 toes. Of course, anomalies happen in the material world. But in general, it's like that. Isn't it? It's like that. Why? You know, man and woman unite, and another life comes, a body, miracle. Each cell of the human body is more complicated than the metropolitan area of Dallas and Fort Worth combined. Each cell. We're here and we're doing what we're doing because we have heard and accepted and understand and are gradually realizing through the process of sadhana bhakti, through the process of intense, sincere study and practice of devotional activities that purify our minds and our senses and our hearts so that we can perceive for ourselves what's going on here. And we can perceive for ourselves ourselves. Krishna says, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam. This process of Krishna consciousness is the perfection of spiritual activities because it gives pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam, direct perception of the self by realization. Imagine how happy you'd feel if you actually knew who you were. Imagine how good you would feel if, you know, the latest thing or person or activity that you've become most attached to wouldn't just evaporate in a few years. Imagine, just imagine how nice that would be. If you didn't have to be forced to leave your loved ones. This is science. It's spiritual science. It isn't some kind of dogmatic, you know, rule and regulation that if you don't follow, then you're going to hell forever. It's not like that. It's a fact. It's a scientific fact that every cell in the human body is that complex. There's that many things going on in every single cell that's more complex than the metropolitan area of Dallas. How is that possible? Well, Krishna explains how it is possible. Because this world and every form within the world is being created by the combination of forms that have information content more complex, or at least as complex, as the form that's created. Now we're being brainwashed. They call us brainwashers. Actually, we are brainwashed. We're trying to wash the brain, but that's another topic. We're being brainwashed into thinking that it all started from a simple point which exploded or something. Now they have so many other theories, but this is one of them. And the random distribution of all the particles from the infinitely dense and infinitely hot singularity point created all this. And everything's becoming more complex as time goes on. And we're supposed to swallow that? If you put any form any form, and you just leave it alone. Don't maintain it, don't take care of it, whether it be a human form, or a building, or a forest, or whatever. Just leave it alone, and what happens over time?
It
disintegrates, basically. It degrades. It degrades. Everything. And yet they're saying, they're trying to convince us that everything is getting, you know, more and more complex and better until eventually what? You die and there's nothing. Wait a second. That doesn't sound like a very good deal. The truth is that the source of each one of us, and eventually if you keep tracing it back to the original source, that source must have information content sufficiently complex to produce everything else. That is God. That is the absolute truth. And we have these eyes and this nose and the ears and the bodily parts, male and female, because Radha and Krishna have them. And they have all the information content for all the different species of life within their forms. This is the Vedic understanding, the Vedic conclusion. And if you think it's wonderful and it's real, if you think it's wonderful that every single cell of the human body is more complex than a major city, in every atom of the universe, according to Brahma Samhita, Krishna is in full present. In every single atom of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in full. And what does it mean, in full? It means all the universes, all the atoms of all the other universes, and all the forms are contained within each atom of every universe. You know, it's one thing to accept sentimentally that God is great. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. But how great? How great? How many spiritualists understand how great? And if they accept, then why are they fighting like cats and dogs with one another? Why? Anybody want to write an essay? This is a good one. Why? In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's described that this whole material world is like a huge, complex banyan tree, the tree of life, and all the different species and planetary systems and living environments. They're all pulsating. As we, as individual souls in this material world, try to compete for the resources, to try to own and control and enjoy the resources that don't belong to us. Not only do they not belong to us, they aren't us. The reason is that they're fighting like cats and dogs, because they don't have a concrete, clear conception of the personality of Godhead or the absolute truth, the source. They don't have a conception that it's greater than everything, greater than anything, and some of them even have come to the point that it is everything. This is the gift that Srila Prabhupada came to give, and he gave his life to give. The clear conception of the absolute truth that is personal and loving and all-powerful and friendly and nourishing, providing everything for everyone. Nityo nityan chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vedadatika man. This is this material world, the Vedic conclusion. Nitya nityananam, there are unlimited individuals, and there's eko bahunam. Out of all those individuals, there's one individual that is bahudikama, providing everything for all the other individuals. That's why we have two eyes and two ears and nose and mouth and senses and heart, all the other parts. Because they're there, the absolute truth. The absolute truth must contain everything within our experience and beyond our experience for it to be the absolute truth, the source of everything. That is Krishna. He's what it means that he's great means that he's infinite dimensional. Infinite dimensional. We're in three dimensions, but Krishna is in infinite dimensions. He's in every single atom fully. There's no time and space. Now, if I'm a certain distance, are you okay?
I'm kind of sick.
You're sick?
Yes.
Can we get you something?
I think I want
to. You take care.
Thank you, I will.
Please.
I'll come back.
No, please, take care.
I will.
You need medicine?
Krishna.
You have medicine?
Okay, yeah. I have some headache stuff.
Anyway, we hope you get better.
I appreciate
that. Hare Krishna.
See you soon.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. You go out this way, it's easier. You don't have to climb out, everybody. Go out this way.
I have my shoes there.
No, you can go around.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that means you don't have to clear. Yeah. Just go out there. There's a hallway. It'll put you right to the place. You take care.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bo. So, we want to be happy, but we don't want to just be happy for a little while until we get sick. We want to be happy forever. That can't be done here in this material world. It is impossible, it's not possible. But we know we want those things, every single one of us. And by practicing Krishna consciousness seriously and strictly over time, you know, I brought up the point about how difficult it is to realize that the consciousness and the intelligence and the subtle body are merged together, and how they're different. It's very difficult to understand, to even get your mind around, to even think of it, think that it's possible to separate those out. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Devahuti, the mother of Kapiladev is an incarnation of Krishna, who came specifically to give us the process of analyzing the material elements and material nature in a way to come to the conclusion. She's asking him, how is it that we can disassociate or disentangle, or you know, the intelligence and the consciousness and all these things. It's impossible. I can't understand it. And then Kapiladev said, yes, it is. It's very difficult. Therefore, we must hear very seriously for a very long time from the proper source, the nature of the Absolute Truth, the nature of the spiritual world, the material world, material elements, how they came into being, what their relationships are, what our relationship with is to them. And gradually, by the assimilation of this knowledge, by the cultivation of this knowledge, sincerely, we become automatically detached. Hari Bol, Hari Krishna. Please come in, sit. You can sit up if you want, if you're more comfortable. Yeah, I thought so. Hare Krishna. How are you?
Thank you.
What's your name?
Susan.
Susan, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Hare Krishna. You?
Mike.
Hare Krishna. How are you?
Good.
Good and getting better, I hope.
Absolutely.
Good. So that's kind of what I had to say tonight. Hare Krishna. I'm so happy to be here with all of you and to share this profound and joyous knowledge. And sorry that we already... What to do? Don't worry, the best part of the program's coming up when we get to eat together. That's the best part. You know, everybody can digest that. Not everyone can digest all these thoughts, but everyone can digest prasadam. So this is the process, for those of you who are new, to hear, to try to understand reality from a source that is not iffy, that is not equivocal, but at the same time has substance, enough substance to satisfy us and to bring us together as living beings, not to separate us due to some external, superficial differences. And I repeat that, you know, nowadays, even in the name of religion, you know, we're not talking about religion here, we're talking about spiritual science. Spiritual science. It doesn't make any difference what religion you are, what nationality you are, what economic bracket you're in, what your race is, what your gender is. When you come into this world, you come in the same way as all of us, naked. And you leave the same way, naked. Maybe not naked, but without anything. Can't take anything with you. So detachment means to become realized that the body isn't me. The things that I have, that I consider to be mine, are not me. This isn't my computer, phone, but if it was... I would say, this is my phone. The phone is here, and I'm here. In every language of the world, in every culture of the world, they say the same thing. It's mi teléfono. It's my telephone. I can't say it in very many languages, because I'm not very adept at languages. I'm so different than this thing that belongs to me. And in every language we say, my mind is disturbed. Or, my mind feels great. You're very intelligent. You have a good intelligence. You have a good intelligence. It means your intelligence and your mind and your telephone is different from you. So isn't it about time we took the plunge to find out who we are? Who is it that's actually dreaming? Who is it that's actually flying through the sky in the dream? And who's going through all of these, you know, interesting experiences here in this material body? We all got one of those. Every once in a while, we got to clear it out. Yeah? And we got to lug it around. Yeah? But in Goloka Vrindavan, there's forms that have nothing to do with matter, that have nothing to do with time and space. But the speculators, they want to tell us that that means in the spiritual world there must be no form. This concept is the concept that needs to be transcended. It is causing havoc in people's spiritual lives as they try to stop their mind in order to get to the place where we're one and we'll realize, yes, I am God. I mean, if I'm God, what am I doing here? You know? If I'm God, how come I can't just go where I want to go and do what I want to do? No, this is illusion. And yet people are passing it off as philosophy and yoga and this and that. So Krishna came to this world, tangible form, and he showed the tangible potency of the Absolute Truth. He lifted Govardhan Hill when he was 7 years old. He bewildered Lord Brahmani when he was five. He pulled down the two Arjun trees and delivered these effulgent demigods when he was still crawling. You can't become God. The position is already taken. Sorry. So therefore, what's the thing? I mean, you know, what is it? What's the thing? The thing is that we're not God, we're servants of God. Every one of us is a servant. How much more evidence do we need? But it's how we're evaluating the evidence that's the problem. It's not that it's a lack of evidence. There's plenty of evidence to prove the Vedic conclusion. It's just how we're analyzing and evaluating the evidence. That's the problem. And what is the problem? Lack of spiritual education. I'm here to present to you, propose to you, that if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, seriously, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books every day, go through them systematically, all of these things that I've been speaking to you about tonight will be revealed to you. And you will see for yourself, not that we just have to tell you something. You will see for yourself who you are, what this material world is, what the reality is, that we don't belong here. And even if you think you belong here, and even if you become the very well situated, you can't stay. It is not possible. If you keep trying to do the impossible, what happens when you try to do the impossible? You make a mess. All right, I want to become an offensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think so. And if I go try to do that, I'll make a mess. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't even get in the game, but if I were to somehow ever get in the game, I would be a mess real soon. no, it's not true. I can do whatever I want. Everybody's equal. You know, no. Each one of us is different. Each one of us is individual. Each one of us has a capacity. And with that capacity, we can learn to serve and love Krishna and become completely satisfied. Yam yam bhapi smaran bhava tyatya janti kalevaram tam tam evaidikontiya sada tar bhava bhavita. What we're thinking of at the time of death, that's where we go. Just like what we're thinking of right now, that's what we look like. You know, I got no hair. He's got dreadlocks. It's both part of the process, you know. You just leave it and don't do anything to it, or you take it all off. Huh? We're not the body. We're not the hair. Man. I did that in the 60s. But it's none of those things. It's not, it doesn't depend on any of those things, our ability to see reality. It depends on our ability to learn and serve. That's what the Krishna Consciousness Movement is. It's a society, it's a community in which we can all come together and hear about, because just hearing about Krishna like this is service. You know, no offense to anybody, including me, but we're not very qualified in this age. You know, actually we're not very qualified. We're not so gifted, intellect, you know, the personalities who compiled the Vedic literatures, they could listen to the spiritual master once and remember it forever. Not just one thing, but everything. That was going on previous ages, many, many ages ago, before the human beings messed this planet up so much that they can barely string three sentences together, what to speak of, you know, remember. I mean, I had a chemistry teacher when I was in high school. His name was Mr. Pascal, and he had photographic memory. And I, you know, at the time it was like a party topic, you know. He would look at a page, you know, and then close the page, and he would tell you exactly what was on the page, including this, if there was a spot or the ink or this. It was like a photographic plate. But then gradually what?
It faded.
Mm-hmm. But you could see the potential. The potential was there. So I'm getting the hook. You know what the hook is? When you're on stage and you've done enough. Thank you very much, all of you. Thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai.
Jai. Jai.